This is Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jonathan All. Grief is part of everyone's life. While it's common in that respect, it's an uncommon experience for each of us when we go through it. It's also been the focus of study for decades. Nancy Sabanya is a world-renowned grief counselor. She's also a teacher, trainer, and filmmaker. Her documentary, The Gifts of Grief, has received high marks at both conferences on grief and film festivals. She's in Iowa City for a few days to present workshops on grief counseling and hosted a screening of her documentary last night. Nancy Sabanya is our guest today on Talk of Iowa. We'll also take your phone calls and emails. That's coming up in a moment. First, this check of news from NPR and Iowa Public Radio. This is Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jonathan All. Nancy Sabanya is a grief counselor. She's also an educator, filmmaker, trainer, and consultant. She spent the last 22 years studying and educating people about the grief process. She's in Iowa City for a couple of days to give some workshops on grief and also had a screening of her documentary, The Gifts of Grief, last night in Iowa City. She joins us in our Iowa City studios. Nancy, welcome to Talk of Iowa.
Thank you so much, Jonathan. I'm so glad to be here.
Over the course of the show, we'll also be taking your questions, anything related to grief. You can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or call 866-780-9100. Now, Nancy, let's start with your documentary. What inspired you to make a documentary about grief?
Well, I'll tell you the short version. I'll try and do my best on it. My personal experience, you know, you're not in, as far as I'm concerned, in any kind of healthcare profession working with grief and death and dying if you didn't have a personal experience. And so my very quick version of that is that when I was 17 years old, my father went camping and never came home on that weekend. He died of a sudden heart attack. And it really changed my life dramatically, and grief and death became teachers for me that day and have been ever since. So I wanted to really work with people in grief. When I was 17, there weren't a lot of people available to me at that time, really being able to provide support. And so it made it very clear to me that I wanted to be able to be there for others. And I found my way to hospice and worked with people for almost 20 years in during their grieving process, helping them to get through a very natural, normal part of our lives, but something that we don't have a lot of education or support around.
Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, our culture, I believe our culture is really afraid of our feelings. And not only are we kind of a death-denying culture that we don't really want to talk about death or grief, but I feel like we aren't even taught how to feel, you know, deeply. And so I think that it's just a difficulty. I'm not sure why. It's just kind of come in maybe with the pioneer age, you know, that we're supposed to be brave and just get on with things and over it. And so that's kind of my feeling about it. Our culture just doesn't give a lot of permission or embrace our deep feelings, including grief.
Is it an embracing of a life goes on?
Yeah.
Kind of mentality?
It feels like that. And I don't know if, you know, I really wonder about, you know, we all came over to the West and from Europe and, you know, pioneering. And, you know, you just kind of move on and travel on and you just take care of yourself and you know, you just go on with life. And I somehow believe that the feelings and the depth of our hearts are in some way not acknowledged or attended to.
You've mentioned the whole pioneer spirit and the westward expansion. Do you find a different approach to grief when you work with clients from a different cultural background?
I actually do. And especially Europeans and other cultures that I've been aware of, the Mexican culture, have a different attitude towards grief, like it's more a part of their lives. You know, Europe and the wars, and people really went through a lot and are able to, you know, talk about it in a different way, feel it in a different way. I've seen that over time, and I have shown the film in different cultures.
What about I'm wondering about Asian communities or Hispanic, Latin, mm-hmm. Latin communities. What's their approach?
Well, the Asian community, I believe, have really wonderful built into their spiritual and cultural traditions, different rituals that they do, you know, like after 49 days, or there's something that's acknowledged and all through the year, and there's an altar made, and, you know, there's offerings to the loved ones. And throughout the year, it's really a part of their kind of traditions. And the Hispanic or Latin American cultures, they seem to have a different kind of embracing of death. Like, again, when there's ritual, like the Day of the Dead in the Mexican traditions, it's really like a celebration and an acknowledgement of both life and death. They're not separated. They're not split in some way that I see in our culture.
We started talking about the movie. We got off a little bit, but did you find working with the people that you interviewed and working with people through the grief process that was included in the documentary, was that a different dynamic than what you have when you work with someone in a grief process where there aren't cameras involved?
Well, I'll have to tell you that in a way it was very similar to me working with somebody in my office. I didn't prepare people for the interview itself. I told them a little bit about what I was going to be talking about, but very briefly. And so in a certain way, it was like, just offering support to someone to talk about their personal story of love and loss. And in that way, people were very, really speaking from their heart and very real and vulnerable in their expression on camera.
It seems to me that grief is one of those things that is so common in the human existence. It happens to all of us.
Yes.
Yet, when it does happen to any one individual, it's like we're completely unprepared for it in a way, and that it's devastating. So it's got this very unique impact, yet it's something that's so common.
Right. And that's something that I also teach, is that we all grieve differently and at our own pace, and it's a very unique experience, but also a universal one. And, you know, like how everyone has their own kind of personality and their style of coping and just dealing with life situations, that's how it is with grief as well, where we find different ways to cope. We have different mechanisms of, you know, moving on and working with our feelings. And each person's so unique that way, and yet there are some common expressions of grief that we pretty much mostly all go through. And it seems like if some of us are able to understand that and sort of get a map for the territory, it makes the journey through grief a little more possible.
Well, when we say grief, I think most people probably associate that with the death of a loved one.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only a small part of grief.
Yes. We have losses every day in our lives. It's a natural part of our life, an integral part of our life. Loss is change, you know, and our expression, our way of dealing with that change is something we call the grieving process. And changes happen all the time. We live in a completely fast-paced, changing world. And so, you know, to kind of cope with that, you know, depending on what the loss is and how deeply it's impacting our lives, then that also impacts how we grieve.
We have an email from Derek in Iowa City who would like your take on the insights on the grief a parent experiences when they learn their child has a disability and how that grief process may change over the life of the child and how that might be different than other kinds of grief.
Right. And, well, that's an ongoing grieving process. So it's not different as far as the initial impact of how that affects us. Here's a loss dealing with a child's situation that you're going to have to live with for your whole life. So the impact of the loss on you in the beginning as a parent is going to be typical, and you're going to go through those stages where, you know, of disbelief and shock and then really feeling the pain of it. And finally, at some point in working with all those feelings, if we allow them to go through us and we really learn and embrace how to go through those feelings, we can get to that place of kind of accepting and working with whatever loss and whatever life losses are brought into our lives.
I recall when I was in college, my health and humanity class, the chapter we did on death and dying talked about the five stages of grief. Is that still kind of the commonly accepted formula of sorts of the things that are common in grieving processes?
Yes and no. I think there's a lot more that's come through since Kubler-Ross's five stages that are used more and more in grief support situations. There's just so much more that's come through, and research and studies. And I often, you know, use a whole different diagram of just how to really teach people about the journey of grief. So yes, I think that really was originally for people in the dying process, and then that kind of moved over towards the grieving process. But I think there's some really important new stuff out there.
Such as?
The thing that I use is this wonderful handout. And the handout itself just really takes you through the grieving process, all the stages of it. And what I would consider the phases of grief are disbelief, denial and numbness, searching for whatever feelings, intense feelings that are going through us, anger, guilt, depression, loneliness, emotional expressions. And then eventually, as you let all of those feelings move through us, we get to some kind of resolution and acceptance of that this loss is a part of our lives. So it's just a very basic little handout that I've been using for years. And there's William Warden's work, and there's a wonderful article that just came out in the New York Times called Good Grief, and I would recommend everybody read it. It has some great books in it.
We're talking to Nancy Sabagna, a grief counselor from Oakland, California, is in Iowa City to hold workshops and also screen her documentary, The Gifts of Grief. We'll be back in just a moment here on Talk of Iowa. We'll also get to your phone calls, 866-780-9100, or email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back more on grief coming up on Talk of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jonathan Aul. Nancy Sabagna is our guest. She is the director and producer of The Gifts of Grief, a documentary on the grief process. She is a grief counselor and educator based in Oakland, California, and is in Iowa City for a couple of days. Nancy, we're going to start with a couple of phone calls. We're going to start with Eric in Iowa City, who has a question. Eric, welcome to Talk of Iowa.
Thank you. First of all, I want to say I'm sorry I missed the screening. I wasn't aware it was going on, but maybe I can catch it some other time. The call I'm calling today regarding adoption and the severe losses around the experience of adoption. I'm an adoptee, and I think it's one of the most grossly overlooked losses. And there's so much cultural support around the denial and numbness of that loss. As an adoptee, I can't tell you how many times I've been told, when trying to experience my loss or express my loss, been told, "Well, but you had such great parents," and that's really not the point. It's not the point at all.
Right.
And I can't. And really, the whole adoption experience is essentially a triad of loss. The birth mother experiences her own loss, which oftentimes will affect her for the rest of her life. Well, it certainly usually does. I can't imagine that it wouldn't. And the adoptive parents experience the loss of being able to have their own children and dealing with the grief of infertility. And then the adoptee not only experiences the loss of their entire tribe and family, but also usually ends up having to go through what I call an identity reassignment process.
Mm.
My name was changed. I have had no references to my biological family for the majority of my life. Now, I know I've met them since, and I'm now in touch with one of my half-brothers,
mm-hmm.
but I essentially don't belong in either camp. I don't really belong in my birth family, and I don't belong in my adoptive family in some respects. And so it's one of those, it's a grief that is very difficult to get to the acceptance and resolution stage,
mm-hmm.
Because it, you know, these people haven't really died, most of them. They're still alive. It's just that we don't see each other, you know, my birth family and I. And so I have found my own ways of dealing with it, primarily through artistic expression, and that's been extremely helpful for me. But I want to do more with it. In fact, I want to write about it. I would love to even maybe do my own movie about my own experience and my mother's story, and it's a very interesting one. But I just wanted to bring it up on your show because I think it's one of the aspects of grief that just gets so overlooked.
Yes. Eric, if I may ask a question, when did you find out you were adopted?
I always knew.
Okay.
I was adopted when I was 7 months old. My mother was able. She initially relinquished me, and then she took me back after a month. I was in the hospital. I was born with a cleft lip and palate, and I was in the hospital for a month. She took me back and tried to take care of me, and then essentially ran out of money for formula. And basically, because of poverty, she made the decision to relinquish me. But only 3 years later, she had my brother, and that was a happy, you know, kind of a happily ever after. So, you know, I mean, that worked out fine. So I've always known. My parents have never, you know, covered up the idea that I was adopted or the fact that I was adopted. But,
sure.
You know, so...
Well, Eric, thank you very much. Thank you for sharing that with us. Nancy, can you talk about that a little bit, the grief in adoption? What has been your experience with that?
Well, what I want to thank Eric for calling in to really just highlight how unacknowledged grief really impacts us so deeply, and most of our culture and most of America and people just around us don't understand that and don't understand the layers of it and how much unacknowledged grief can really completely shape and mold your life. So I want to just thank you, Eric, for calling on that. I haven't had that much experience with adopted people, but just by hearing what he spoke to, we're talking about just a multiple layered experience of grief, like that's not only on for him, but within his family, adoptive family, and his mother. Original mother, all of it is so complicated. And when you have complicated loss and you're having to live with it, you know, ongoingly, you got to find your ways to really be able to process the feelings and to work through them. And his ideas about finding some kind of creative outlet, whether it's writing or artwork or film or anything, is a way for us to really integrate and digest those ongoing, complicated, just constant feelings of loss that we're faced, and especially in an adoptive situation.
When we talked about the Kubler-Ross phases, and you talked about some other phases in a handout that you like to use, do you find a certain number of people get frustrated because then they believe that it's supposed to be a linear process?
Yes.
When in fact it
it's
isn't.
Not at all. And yeah. Part of my handout, which you can't show on radio, is that it looks like a roller coaster with loop-de-loos. You know, the ones that make you go upside down screaming. So that it really isn't a linear process, and that we move in and out of our feelings and the phases of grief all through the journey. That when we're in it, and that even after you feel like you've arrived at some kind of acceptance, something could happen, another loss, somebody walks by that reminds you of someone who just died, and, you know, there you are again in the first phase feeling the intensity of it all, and that's normal, and that's just how it is, and fresh grief experiences can bring up old losses. And that's okay. And so you just keep working with the feelings and allowing them to move through you. The minute we deny them and push them away, that's when we find ourselves in trouble.
do people ask about when is, you know, everyone grieves in different ways, mm-hmm. and they have different time frames. Is there ever a question of, well, when, at what point is it unhealthy that mm-hmm. your grief process takes a certain amount of time?
It's hard for me to say, put a time frame on that. I think it's just individual for everyone. I mean, there's a general sense of, you know, anywhere from 6 months to 2 or 3 years that you might be working with a significant loss. Mm-hmm. If it's prolonged and goes on for over that period of time, then I would support people to get some help, some support, some counseling. Somehow they're getting stuck in the process. And really, if we are able to embrace the feelings and let grief move through us, it is a process. It does have a beginning, a middle, and not an end like we're over it. We learn to live with loss. It's a part of us. It's a part of who we are. We integrate it into our lives. And it can be an important piece of our lives that brings meaning and significance in new ways. So that's what I can say about it at this time.
You've said that there's always a story that brings people into death, dying, and grief work. Mm-hmm. How did you get into this?
Well, like I told you about my father dying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was that the initial point where it basically, because it was such a deeply imprinted pain in my life, I really mm-hmm. went on a search for the meaning of, you know, what are we doing here? What's life all about? What I had questions. I wanted answers. It took me on a spiritual journey and an emotional and deep inner journey so that I could really look to life and find out, well, what are we doing here? And I started to really discover more and more what that meant for me.
Does working with being a grief counselor and educating other people about grief, does it ease your grief process, or does it make you relive your grief process?
What I can say is that it feels deeply inspiring to be able to be with others going through the grief process. It doesn't feel like it, in any way kind of re-traumatizes me in any sense of it. I feel like that there's hope because we're learning how to grieve, and that there's a way to learn to live with loss that can bring so much more richness and meaning. And so I feel really kind of honored and privileged to work with people rather than it's in any way feeling like it's disturbing me.
I'd imagine it's just got to be emotionally draining at times, though.
Yeah, it can be emotionally draining, and you find your ways to take care of yourself. You know, I've sang in a gospel choir for a lot of years. I'm a big dancer. I really enjoy life to its fullest. Good friends, travel. You know, I just really take care of myself. Love hot baths and just, you know, massages and really taking care of me. And so I don't really find that I'm, you know, drained more than not.
Nancy Sabania is with us. We'll have more with her after a little break here on Talk of Iowa, a grief counselor and educator from California, documentary filmmaker on that topic. More with Nancy in just a moment here on Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. We also had a caller, Adrian from Des Moines, wants to say the Good Grief article appeared in The New Yorker and not The New York Times. So there's that. We'll be back with Nancy Sabania in just a moment here on Talk of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jonathan Aull. Our guest is Nancy Sabania. She's a grief counselor from Oakland, California. She's also an educator, trainer, consultant, and filmmaker, the director and producer of The Gifts of Grief, a documentary that was aired last night in Iowa City. She's in Iowa City also to do some workshops on grief counseling. Nancy, I wanted to continue with, what advice do you have for someone who is trying to help someone going through the grief process? If a close friend of yours has lost a loved one, and if they're going mm-hmm. through the grief process, as the friend, what can you do?
First of all, to really acknowledge that the person is going through grief, and not to be in any way afraid to approach them, to address it directly, to say the name of the person who has died, or whatever name the loss itself. But to really be there for them and present, and let them know that you're willing to hold the pain of the grief with them. I think part of what happens in this culture is that we haven't learned how to hold each other in our pain when we fall apart. That, you know, we often get afraid that we're going to cause more pain or grief if we approach someone and really ask them, you know, to tell us about what happened and what their grief is like and how they're really doing. And I think being willing to show up and be present and to be listening open-heartedly and non-judgmentally and hold the space for a person's pain is the greatest gift you can give that person.
Do you find that people take the approach of, oh, I don't want to bother them, I'll just let them go through this?
Right. And I think that's because, you know, oftentimes our own personal losses might be touched when someone is going through it, a friend of ours, and there may be some fear about really addressing that in ourselves and feeling those feelings. And so it's easier to kind of, you know, maybe walk away or give them space rather than to address those same feelings in ourselves and then approach that person and say, you know, I'm really willing to sit here and be with you in your grieving process. Yeah.
We have an email from Pam in Des Moines who says, my 24-year-old mother, a married woman, a Navy nurse in World War II, abandoned me at the end of my first year. The adults in my life have never discussed the matter. I've gone through a variety of emotions, leaving me with these questions. Should I grieve, or is that useless? Should I be angry and process that? Should I just move on? That's from Pam in Des Moines.
I want to say that it's never too late to grieve, and that I would invite her to really go through that grieving process around her mom, to feel all the feelings. Anger is a part of grief, you know, all kinds of feelings, guilt, blaming, anxiety. We feel depressed. Let yourself go through those feelings and that process and get some support for that.
Adrian in Des Moines also called in and asked, what about the grief of an ailing spouse and being the healthy survivor touched upon? What is the dynamic of that grief like?
For the person who's healthy?
Yeah.
It's pretty difficult because here you are in, you know, your own feeling good and healthy situation, and you're with a spouse who's ill. It's painful. It's hard to be with that person and to be the kind of survivor, right? So allow the feelings, whatever those feelings are. You can even talk to your partner about it. I really believe in communicating and expressing, acknowledging, and really naming and recognizing the feelings and sharing those with each other. I think that's the best way through. And so maybe you'll be crying together. Maybe you'll feel lots of different feelings, but it'll help bring some closeness and maybe even some closure for both of you.
Let's talk a little about the movie again for a moment. I suspect your motivation was to use that vehicle to educate people about the grief process.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of your material suggests that it's often shown at grief workshops, but it's also gotten some play at film festivals.
Mm-hmm, a few.
Is that really where you reach a bigger audience? Because I'd imagine the people who go to a grief workshop are probably already seeking information and to be better educated about the grief process.
Well, I'm going to say that I haven't been accepted into a lot of film festivals, but the ones that I have been have been really well received, because there's not many films that have grief as the most, you know, specific piece of the topic. And oftentimes people aren't interested so much in coming to really confront that feeling in themselves. So, yes, I've reached larger audiences that way, but I have to say that it's through the conferences, the churches, the you know, community centers. I feel like I've been going sort of like from town to town, where, you know, loss is a part of everybody's life. So there's no one on this planet that isn't going to grieve and then can't relate to what these people are speaking to in this film. So it feels like it's just got a momentum of its own that's going kind of town by town, you know, church by church, conference from conference, festival to festival, and just reaching people in that way. And I feel like, and that's wonderful. I'm just so glad that it's getting out at all.
What dynamic did the film give you in terms of reaching people and educating people about grief that you didn't have in your toolkit before you made the film?
Let's see. Probably what I could say best about that is, you know, I had no idea that I'd be, first of all, traveling at the level that I'm traveling. And I had no idea that it would be, you know, translated into different languages. And it has gone into Spanish and Dutch, and that it crossed cultures and continents. And the different issues that everybody has, even though grief has its, you know, general expressions, when I'm in Europe and dealing with the war, that was something I wasn't really quite prepared for. And yet it still was the same kinds of expressions of loss. So there's that universality, but the uniqueness. And I'm finding that it's just kind of stretching me in an interesting way to be able to speak to all of that.
In the film, the Reverend Cecil Williams says that you can't really accept grief unless you get angry. Mm-hmm. What does he mean by that?
Well, it's one of those controversial points of the film as well, where I've actually put a workbook together, and it's part of the question in the workbook to ask people, do they agree with that? Is that something that feels true for them? Does anger have to be a part of grief? It's a question. It's really a question. I'm glad he brought it through, because for a lot of people are mad. People are mad that somebody they love just died, or something that they really were so invested in, whether it's a job or a home or whatever, they've lost. And so that anger is a part of the grieving process. Not everybody shows it in the same way or experiences it in the same way, but it tends to be a part of the grieving process. And I love that he brought it up in the way that he did, so that people can really kind of question it in themselves, in their own personal experience of grief.
Angry at the cancer, angry at the person who died, angry at God.
All of the above, okay, and beyond, yes.
And do you find that is that anger universally applied, or do in some people's grief they seem to direct that anger in? I guess, is there a healthy and an unhealthy way to direct that anger when you're going through the grief process?
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to say that it's just normal and natural for people to blame and to direct it at, you know, whether it's a doctor in a hospital or, you know, at somebody not taking care of themselves during their lifetime. All of that's just normal. I mean, if people get stuck in the anger and they can't allow other feelings to move through, then maybe there's going to be some issues and problems down the road there. What I'm trying to say is that anger is a natural, normal feeling that we go through, usually under any kind of loss situation, to some degree, right? So it's pretty normal. It's if you get caught in it and stuck in it, and that's the only way you're finding your expression of grief, is that I would consider it an issue.
I'm wondering if people are afraid of feeling acceleration, that if they allow themselves to get angry, that anger will get to an irrational level. If they allow themselves to be depressed, that depression will get to a bad level. Because you've talked about kind of that fear of allowing ourselves to feel. Is that
exactly
part of that?
I believe so. I think because we weren't taught as children to really feel and deal with our feelings, like we don't have classes in elementary school or high school about feelings 101. I think they sometimes
you know, they start to. My son actually is in school. They meet with the guidance counselor every week, and they talk about very specific feelings. But anyway,
well, I'm excited about that. It's just not a natural, you know, like it's not across the board across the country. I'm thrilled to hear that, Jonathan, because if we learn how to really be with our feelings from a young age, they're not going to be so overwhelming and come and slap us in the face like a huge tidal wave, to the point where we're worried that we're going to, you know, do something terrible if we feel angry, right? That it's kind of a normal feeling learn how to work with it, learn, you know, how to express it without hurting yourself or others. And you know what? It happens. We're going to be angry throughout our lives at different times. We're going to feel loss and pain, and we're going to get depressed periodically. And you know what? They're normal. You know, feelings just are, if we just let them move through us.
Let's go to the phones. Marty, who is on the highway, has a comment. Marty, welcome to the program.
Hi, very good show this morning. It's hard to say I'm enjoying it, but, you know, I'm getting into it, I guess. One of the things that this generation is facing and will continue to face is living loss, and that is Alzheimer's.
Yes.
And I just wanted to offer up, I recently saw a movie called Going Away that deals with this whole issue, and it's just fantastic as it follows the living loss, you know, the spouse is alive, but they're gone, and in this case, the husband has to go through the entire grief process. But I just recommend it for anyone really, because it's a great movie, but also anyone who thinks they may or might be going through the living loss of a spouse via Alzheimer's.
Thanks
a lot, Marty. That's great. Living loss, that also can happen with a child. A close friend of mine has a child with a degenerative neurological disorder, and they go through the first grief of watching the child end up unable to communicate, and they kind of disappear, and then the second round of grief when the child actually passes. What's your advice for people dealing with that living loss issue, either on the young or old end of the spectrum?
Well, again, I just want to say, you know, let yourself have your experience of whatever those feelings of loss are, right? If we're not avoiding or denying those feelings and we fully give expression to them consciously with awareness, then you know what? They're going to teach us something about what we actually are going through. And maybe they're going to show us in some way what's needed, right? If we're just... I feel like feelings give us important information about reality and what's actually happening. And so if we don't turn away from them, they may be able to give us some information that's really important in dealing with our situation and living with that loss and being with that person, whether they're young or old, and teaching us how to work with each other in a way that's compassionate, that's real, that isn't running away from, but really meeting fully.
What do you believe is the biggest misconception about grief that you run into in your practice and in your teaching?
I'm going to say something about almost that people feel like that it's supposed to be different, that or that they need to get over it. And that instead of it being like a natural, normal part of our lives, like it's not supposed to be there. And I don't understand exactly how we've gotten this disconnected from our loss and grieving. I feel like, you know, in the 1900s, we were much more connected to just natural parts of grief and loss being a part of our households. And if somebody died, they were, you know, there was... you know, the parlor room where they were laid out for the family and people to come over from the neighborhoods and see and talk and tell stories. There's some way that we're so disconnected that people feel like, you know, we should just get over it and be over it quick and let's just get on. And I think technology has so much stimulation and so much quickness about, you know, let's just move through. And it's just not how the process works. It takes a little time to integrate. We have a lot of resiliency inside of ourselves, and there's ways that we need to just kind of work with ourselves and be able to process what loss has to teach us.
What does loss teach us?
Good question. I believe it teaches us about our humanity, about what it is to be a human being. It really gives us, I was talking about it yesterday, that it kind of flattens the playing field. It's like no matter who you are, you're going to have grief and loss. If you love anyone, you're going to experience grief. It teaches us about what's most important. It like takes away or burns off what's not essential anymore and takes us right to the core of what's important in our lives. It also teaches us about caring and compassion and really feeling with someone, feeling with humanity. That's what I can say right now.
Well, and how does that, if you grieve well, how does that impact you going through your everyday life? How do you become a better person for having grieved well and being more in touch with your humanity?
Well, I believe, like I was saying, that your awareness and your sense of what's most important, relationships, really taking care in those relationships, treating each other with respect, really being able to fully appreciate life at a new level with richness and meaning that maybe wasn't there before, and some resources and strength and resiliency in yourself that maybe wasn't there before, that you can reach out to others, that you can, you know, there's a capacity of really caring and living that care in beautiful ways, in actions, in artistic ways, in humanistic ways, through living your life with that understanding of the deeper meaning of life.
It was just pointed out to me that I use the word, if you grieve well.
Mm-hmm.
and we've talked about grieving being very different from person to person, and I also did ask about, you know, when you grieve too much, but is it possible to grieve well and grieve poorly, and is that easy to determine when people's grieving processes are so different?
Mm-hmm. What I can say about that, what I've seen over the years, is that when people are able to embrace the grieving process, and that includes all those feelings we've been talking about and the phases and the different ways that grief takes you, when they're able to go with it and embrace it, there usually is some way that that teaches them to, again, be more compassionate, have more courage, more awareness. And that just feels like it's just a way of allowing a process to really teach you and move you. It's when people avoid it or in some way start denying or running away from, whether they're getting over busy at work or moving towards, you know, alcohol or drugs, or in some way kind of moving away from just a natural process that we go through when we're in loss, that's when it seems like that there's more difficulties that people's lives start to express, whether it becomes alcoholism or workaholism or something that becomes in some way interrupting their lives. That's what I can say that I've seen.
Let's go to one more phone call here. Karen in Cedar Rapids has a question. Karen, you're on Talk of Iowa.
Yes, I'm a writer, and I'm writing about this in a book. And so this has really been very helpful to me besides my own personal, you know, dealing with it. But I was wondering, do you ever go into universities' writer's programs or the drama department so that when these works of fiction come out, that they show grief in a full and correct way?
That's
interesting.
It's a great avenue that I haven't ever known how to find myself there. So I'd love to go ahead and follow that up.
The University of Iowa has a great Iowa's workshop.
Well, I'd love to be invited there.
Well, and I guess do you feel people do get a misperception about what the grieving process is supposed to be like because of the way they see it presented in a piece of fiction, a book, or a play, or a movie.
Absolutely. We're getting better. I feel like, you know, over time we're getting closer and closer to showing it more accurately with more reality. But then there's, you know, those shortcuts, and those shortcuts can be really misleading. And I think the caller calling in knows what I'm speaking about. I mean, if it's not really given its full weight and its full completeness, people again will think, oh, quick fix, let's hurry up and all of that. So,
Nancy, we have about a minute left. Okay. If someone hasn't seen The Gifts of Grief, mm-hmm. how can they see that?
You can go to my website at www.giftsofgrief.com. I'm selling them on the website. I also on the website will let people know where I'm screening it, and or at a conference or wherever. I was in Iowa City with Iowa City Hospice for a wonderful day yesterday doing a workshop with them. I'm going kind of across the country periodically, and so look for me.
Giftsofgrief.com is the website, right?
Yes.
Great. Nancy Sobania, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Jonathan, thank you so much for having me.
That's all the time we have for Talk of Iowa today. Our program was produced by Dennis Reese. Assistance today from Rosalind Sixby and John Pemble. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa is available at iowapublicradio.org. You can contact us anytime at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Jonathan All. Thanks for joining us.